There have been a rise in incidences of tourists using rideable suitcases. So a few weeks ago, we had a Chinese lady. She was using her motorized suitcase to travel around this sidewalk in Japan. I think it was in Osaka. She was arrested because she was violating the Motor Vehicles Act. She said, "I don't consider this a vehicle." And I thought that was a very interesting defense, because "I don't think it's that thing, therefore you can't arrest me for that thing" is a very interesting way of thinking about it. It's sort of the entitled nature of the modern person, I think. But because these incidences are becoming more common, it's important to know how things are classified in the country you're in. So motorized suitcases are classified as motorized bicycles. So anything under 50cc, so electric bikes, these electric suitcases, all these things, if they're probably under 50cc engine, they are all classified together right now, probably electric scooters as well, as motorized bicycles. If you want to ride one, you need to have a license and the safety equipment. So, of course, what does that mean? What kind of safety equipment do you need to ride your suitcase down the sidewalk? Well, I think actually the first problem is you shouldn't be riding this thing down the sidewalk. That's one of the rules of motorized bicycles. So you need to register your vehicle. So you bring your suitcase to Japan, you need to register it if you want to ride it around. It needs a rear view mirror. It needs turn signals. So these are really small. I don't think, like, their turning circle is so small, I don't think anyone would actually have a chance to, like, dodge out of the way if you actually were signaling. I think the whole point is that these are supposed to be ridden on the road and not the sidewalk. So rear view mirror, turn signals, you need liability insurance, and you have to wear a helmet. So if you want to ride your suitcase, you got to get your helmet on. You got to get your license and registration ready. You have to have insurance in case you have an accident. And you have to have a rear view mirror and turn signals. That is going to be one pimped out suitcase. And I think we now have our new show for Ludacris. I actually now forget who that joke would have worked if I could have remembered who was actually the guy who did the Pimp My Ride show. I suppose I could look it up. I could. The power of editing means I could look it up and then, like, erase that mistake. And it would seem as if I knew my Pimp My Ride culture. But I think I'm pretty comfortable admitting I don't. So we had the Ubisoft releasing Assassin's Creed. I think it's Shadows. It takes place in Japan. And there was a petition. So we did a story on a petition again a few weeks ago. These are sort of the update bits. The petition got to about 80,000 signatures, which is a lot of signatures. They're basically saying, "You are being inaccurate in your depiction of Japanese history. You are being dishonest in your presentation of Japan as a culture," that kind of stuff. My counter argument was, I am currently playing a game called Like a Dragon Ishin, and it is, you are a samurai and you go around and you beat people up and take their money. Maybe that is accurate. Anyways, I would say a lot of things that happen culturally in video games are not accurate, and that's kind of the whole point. Ubisoft came out with a statement to try to, like, respond to all of this. It said, while Yasuke, so Yasuke is the one of the two main protagonists. There's a female ninja and this black dude samurai. He's actually very famous, Yasuke. Now, the problem has come up, it's turned out in, like, about 2015, this guy wrote a book called Yasuke, the True Black Samurai, or something like that. The original black samurai, maybe the first black samurai. I didn't get the title. Turns out that guy who wrote that book edited the Wikipedia page to say some stuff that would match better with his book, as opposed to maybe being factually accurate. That's some pretty shady stuff. That shouldn't reflect too poorly on Ubisoft in this case, because this is an author trying to change the narrative so that his book could be more popular, because he's discovered something. But Ubisoft has said, like, look, there's a lot of people talking about this. Some people seem to be upset. Let's clear the air. So their statement is, while Yasuke is depicted as a samurai in Assassin's Creed Shadows, we acknowledge that this has been a matter of debate and discussion. So they're not saying he wasn't. They're not saying he was. A lot of people are saying that Yasuke was not a samurai. Maybe he was a lower level tier, because, again, Japanese society at that time was very hierarchical. He was maybe an assistant to a samurai, maybe not on par with a samurai, I think is what they're saying. Back to the quote, we have woven this carefully into our narrative, and with our other lead character, the Japanese shinobi, Naoe, who is equally important in the game, our dual protagonists provide players with different gameplay styles. So they're not apologizing. They're just saying, look, there's a story that this guy's a samurai. We thought that was pretty neat. We also got a girl. You don't even have to play the guy. I bet you have to play the guy a little bit. But essentially, why are you focusing so much on the guy? We got a hot girl. You guys focus on the hot girl. Forget about the guy. Some boss fight clip came out and he walked out to rap music and a lot of people were deeply offended by that. I think it's dumb, but I wasn't offended by it because I don't know, maybe Yasuke would have liked it. That's the problem, is we don't know what he would have been down for. And we can't trust Wikipedia because we know the author of the book to promote this character's history altered in order to coincide with the release of the book so that it would be more accurate. Then it came out that this was being discussed in the government in Japan. And I thought, wow, that's weird. The government in Japan discussing video games? Because again, they don't discuss Mario Kart. They don't discuss Like a Dragon Yakuza. These are media properties. Whether they're accurate or not is kind of irrelevant to the government. So what happened was, there's a guy, he's part of the NHK party. The last month, maybe, we've talked about the posters that the NHK party has put up for the gubernatorial election in Tokyo. They are making a mockery of the elections. They're putting up porn stars. They're putting up lonely people. They're selling the spaces to just anyone. So like a social media influencer wants to put their poster up, they would sell them their space. They don't take it seriously. So this is essentially a joke party that tries to find not significant issues in Japan and then tries to push them to the forefront so that people start taking them seriously or not. I don't know. It's hard to see what their actual end goal is because they're spending their time actually doing this. I guess if I could get paid to say dumb stuff to the other members of government, that wouldn't be a terrible job. This guy, one of the guys from this party that's essentially a joke party, because there's about 5-6 members in the government because they do here and there get voted in. I think that would actually be like a protest vote. Like, everyone else is so bad, we're voting for the joke. NHK party asked for comments because they had concerns over the historical inaccuracies. Again, they didn't do this for any of the Yakuza games, any of the other samurai. How many samurai games have I played? Historical inaccuracies would just be rife it's a fictional thing. And that's maybe why I'm like, why are you even spending any time on this at all? The Japanese foreign minister said, this is not our concern. Pretty good statement. I mean, he's like, look, there's an American video game company making a video game. It's set in Japan. Whether it's accurate or not, we don't give a shit. We got other stuff to do. We got North Korea. We got Russia. We got other actual things we have to deal with. The education minister said, please don't violate morals. So that's it. Like, you're making a video game. Kids are going to play the video game. Try to keep a certain amount of morality in it. I mean, they also know what video games are like. So they're like not even saying it too strongly. They're like, you know, do your best. Don't violate sort of humanity and morality and be nice people. Pretty accurate, pretty fair statement from the Minister of Education. The NHK party, though, I just found out, lost their political party status this year because 2 members were expelled. So basically, they didn't have enough members in parliament anymore to be considered an actual political party. So I'm wondering if that's going to have any effect on them later, because I guess you can still try to run for office even if you're not a political party. But the NHK name now, the NHK party name is now being sullied to the degree where even the joke isn't worth it anymore. There is a bar in Shinjuku called Okubo Bar, and it is an Italian bar and restaurant. Not very interesting. There's lots of bars, lots of Italian bars and restaurants in Shinjuku, I'm sure. This is actually on the border of what you would call Koreatown in Tokyo. On the window of the restaurant, this is why they got attention. They'd written in sort of that chalk ink stuff, a marker. They'd written on the window of the restaurant, although diversity and tolerance may be fashionable. And I was like, you can stop right there. with the beginning of the statement laid out the way it is right there. You know it's not going to get better. You know there's not going to be an improvement or like a revelation by the end of this, whatever paragraph they put on the door. These are people who have just made a decision. We're going to sink this ship as hard and as fast as we can. Diversity and tolerance may be fashionable. So they're actually saying that there's a time when diversity and tolerance wasn't fashionable, which in Japan is very, very true. I would not call those modern times. Japan, I would not say is diverse, but I would actually say overall is quite tolerant. The statement continues, we refuse to serve Chinese and Koreans as it's unpleasant and saps our will to work. So there's been, again, a lot of issues with tourism in Japan. There's a lot of people feeling the burden of over-tourism. There's a lot of restaurants saying, like, we can't deal with foreign people who come in who don't try to speak any Japanese, who don't learn any Japanese. How is it our burden? That kind of thing. There's been the two-tier pricing has become an issue. They have a price that's more expensive for foreign people and tourists and one that's cheaper for locals. And then they actually went ahead and said, no. The tourist is the regular price. We just give a discount to locals, which I thought was an interesting way around the problem. So this is an Italian restaurant, and yet kimchi is on the menu. So they have kimchi on the menu, but they're saying we don't want Koreans in our restaurant. And so it was because it was so specific. A lot of people on the internet were like saying, like, well, how can you tell? What if it's a Thai or a Cambodian or some other kind of Asian person comes in? How are you going to be able to tell it's the right kind of person for you to hate? The tweet with the image of the picture got 360,000 likes. I'm wondering if that means that 360,000 people liked it, like actually liked it, or they were marking it or trying to promote it so that other people could see. Because there's one way, like, you boost the performance and say, like, hey, everyone, look at this. And now that everyone's looking at it, yeah, I don't know. I don't know what that means. Likes, because remember the old Facebook, it had the like, and they'd be like, my cat died. And then you want the person to know you saw it, so you click like, and I liked your cat died. So that's kind of there's a communication issue there, maybe. There's also the irony of this being a Italian restaurant run by Japanese people and they're racist. So if they were, I think a real racist in Japan should just do Japanese food. Like, if you're gonna be racist, do it right. Like, just don't, you know, you wouldn't do no Italian, no French food. You need Japanese food. You can only do Japanese food if you're being a Japanese racist person. Then there were people coming up with the issues of what if you have a Japanese what if you have a second generation Chinese person? So someone who's born in Japan, speaks Chinese, is ethnically Chinese, but speaks Japanese perfectly. So you can't tell the difference. Are you still going to refuse them service? This is kind of the issues of they're making statements, I think, just to push people away, but the statements are so broad and so unclear. This is one of the problems with racism is they don't tend to define themselves very well. One of the problems with racism is they don't really go through the effort that I would like to see people put into, you know, defining themselves. This is, in essence, illegal in Japan. There's the Japanese Constitution guarantees equality. So you technically can't refuse service based on ethnicity. But at the same time, management does have the right to refuse service. So that's one of those sort of issues that comes up, like, is it okay? Is it not okay? You can refuse specific customers who cause problems, but I think they have to cause the problem first. So if I just walk in as a foreign person and you say, I don't want to serve you because you're a foreign person, that's illegal. If I walk in and I knock over some tables and you say, I don't want to serve you because you're knocking over tables, the fact that I'm a foreign person is now irrelevant. So it'll be interesting to see if this restaurant adapts its philosophy or goes under, or if there's any sort of real problem at all. This came out at the beginning of last week and I haven't heard about it since. So I actually think it's a non-issue now. I think people have just decided I'm not going to that restaurant. Deer roam Nara. So Nara City is famous for the deer that roam. They're essentially domesticated. They wander around. At Golden Week, I went to a place called Miwajima, which also has a similar thing. It has a lot of deer on this island and they all roam around. They're all very plump. They are vaguely interested in you to see if you give them food. I was walked with a couple. It was actually very nice. They're very calm. It's very soothing. They'll stop. You can take pictures with them. They're very, very used to people and tourists and getting fed. There's a video that went a little viral in Japan of a man in Nara. He's walking through a small herd of deer. So they're on the sort of the sidewalk. They're wherever the people are because that's, again, where they can get food. When one gets in the way and doesn't move immediately, he kicks it in the butt. Now, he doesn't kick it hard, but he does kick a deer, and the deer is fairly innocent. And if you just walk up to them, they do move out of the way. They are not looking for any sort of confrontation. These are deer. These are not like angry animals. They are just like trying to chill out. They just want to live their lives. They want nothing. They just want food. I mean, that's all they really want, is to be fed all day, every day until they explode. He moves on. Same deer still in front of him. He kicks it again. Another deer looks at me, slaps the deer in the face. So this went viral because you're beating the shit out of some deer. What's wrong with you? Like the deer will get out of your way. You don't need to hit them or kick them or do anything. If you just nudge them, they'll just start to walk out of the way. We can all agree. Dick move. But in Japan, these deer are considered natural monuments. So they're actually protected by the government. It's a crime to abuse the deer in any way, which means that they are protected. Abusing them can get you up to 5 years in prison. There's no info on how far the police are along in this case, but I do know the police are actually looking for him. There is a video of him with a full face on camera, so I actually think he will not be too hard for them to find. An 8-year-old girl was riding her bicycle, and a guy jumps out and tries to steal her backpack from the basket at the front of the bicycle. She stops, she shouts at the guy, shouts stop, she grabs her bag and she holds on, and the guy takes off. He's later arrested. It turns out it's an American guy. I just want to know, what are you trying to steal from an 8-year-old? Like, what does an 8-year-old have that you think you're going to steal? Like, in that backpack, I can tell you that when my kids were 8 years old, they had nothing of value or interest in their backpack. They probably had school books, maybe a snack. They didn't have any money. They didn't have anything of value. I mean, they're 8 years old. They get what I give to them to take to school or wherever they're going. They don't get anything else. I really want to know what this man's motivation was for trying to steal a backpack from an 8-year-old girl, only because I don't see any value in the act at all. Like, the theft isn't valuable. Why are you attacking 8-year-old children? This is weird. Is this worth getting arrested over? One of the questions I do the most often when we talk about crime is, was this worth getting arrested over? And this is one of the ones that's like, not only was the crime not particularly good, you weren't going to get anything for it. Like, at least if I can commit a dumb crime and get a ton of money and I get arrested later, I have the potential to get a ton of money. In this case, that potential's not even there. Fucking useless. Three Japanese men, age 69, nice, 70 and 80. I shouldn't do that joke. That's dumb. All right. I can't help it. That joke has now been drilled into me. Three men, age 69, 70, and 88, met in prison. And they decided that once they get out of prison, they were going to team up and rob houses. They had a name. I love when the police give, like, criminals nicknames. These were the G3S. So in Japanese, if you put those sounds together, it sounds like grandpas, basically. So the police were calling the grandpas, and they came up with, essentially an acronym for them. This is how far they'd gone. That's kind of awesome. In May, they robbed a house, and they got 200 yen. 200 yen is less than $2 at the current exchange rate. They did also get three bottles of whiskey that were worth about 10,000 yen or something like that. So they went off. They didn't get any money, but they had some party time. Then in June, a month later, they robbed a house and they got jewelry worth about 1 million yen. So this is actually a real score. So those are the two we know of for sure at the moment. They are suspected in 10 other burglaries. So maybe this actually was a very profitable thing that they were doing. So as opposed to the previous story I just did, where I talked about a crime that seemed to have no value for the criminal at all, 1 million yen, I mean, that's something. You're usually going to get something out of it. They even had, like, what I considered one of the flaws of most criminals. These guys had a plan. They were organized. Unlike our racist restaurant. These guys were organized. So the 88-year-old was the burglar, which is, at first I'm like, wow, so the oldest guy's going to go in and like rummage around the house and stuff. But maybe that's what he was sort of, he could do, he was known for. The 70-year-old was the driver. So he waited outside in the car so the 88-year-old could, I was about to say run, hustle as best he could out of the house, jump in the car and they could drive away. The 69-year-old, his job was to sell the stolen goods. So this is it. They had a system, they had an organization, they had a pattern, they had a plan, which makes me think that the other 10 robberies, why it took 10 robberies for them to get caught is because they actually kind of knew what they were doing. They were actually doing a good criminal job. When they were arrested, because there was security cameras, this might have been something that when they were back committing crimes back in the day, security cameras weren't as much of a thing. There were security cameras on two instances, which is how they kind of started to figure out there was more than one person involved. They were older men, and they started to put it together. They were arrested. Apparently they needed physical support while being arrested. So the police are there. They're arresting the guy. They're basically partially carrying the guy to get into the police car because he's so old and frail. They asked for his motive. Again, most of the time we don't get a motive, so I'm very happy when we get a motive. The motive for the crimes was to make a living. So these are three older men. They've spent time in prison. They probably couldn't get jobs. They probably don't have a pension. They need a way to live. So they went back to what they knew. They started committing crimes. So the benefit is that they get to go back to prison where they get fed and they're clearly familiar and they can try to make a better plan if they manage to live long enough to get out of prison.